So hello everybody, this is Dave Morris for the HBR Community News for November. Now with me tonight I have Ahuka.
Hello.
And Ken Palin is lurking in the background, but I don't think he's going to be making an appearance. He's probably listening to us and we might get the odd comment through the chat or something, but other than that, it's just Ahuka and myself. So we're going to try and run things as per normal, but I'm not Ken Fallon, so I don't have the gift of the gab to quite the extent that he does, but we'll do our best anyway. So we'll start off with the new hosts, welcoming new hosts to HPR. We have, first of all, Kevin Wisher, who was surprised to find as a new host. He's been on the horizon for, he's been a mainstay for HBR for quite some time, I think. But and also we have Keith Murray, we have Underrunner, and Andrew Conway. Okay, so let's just head off straight into the show details. Okay, so starting with show number 1370, Blogging with Octopress by Tony Pelias, would that be? You're not coming through very clearly.
I think Pelias.
Yeah, okay.
Okay to me.
Yeah, okay. So he was telling us about Octopress, which is a static site generator. Not something I've really had direct experience of. How about yourself?
No, I haven't. I use WordPress for my own.
Mm-hmm. I think he was not happy with WordPress, so he was looking for various other possibilities. He did a nice summary of what was available there. It looked pretty interesting, I thought.
Oh, absolutely. It was a good program. WordPress seems to work.
Yes. Yeah. I've looked at these things myself, but have not decided on one yet. But Octopress looks interesting. I'm not sure whether you have to learn Ruby to use it, but still sounds interesting. So the next episode was 1371, which was Pokey telling us about the sad tale of the lost banner of HPR.
An epic tale.
Yes, it's really sad that people get stuff that's not meant for them and don't send it back. It was quite a sad thing. But
yeah,
still.
But it seems to have worked out. Anyone who's following on the mailing list probably is aware of this. And I'm sorry, I don't have all these names at the top of my head, but someone stepped forward and said, well, you know, I work at a place that does this, and just tell me what you want, and I'll get you a new banner.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds fantastic. It's the HBR community doing what it does, which is fantastic. So yeah, the subject of stickers and business cards and all the rest of it was interesting for me anyway, because I'm hoping to go to FOSDEM in Belgium in February, and hoping to have an HBR table there. So we're looking to make sure we've got plenty of those things for that. That's both Ken and I, hopefully, assuming Ken's okay by then. So
sounds great. I wish I could go to FOSDEM, but I don't really have the budget for that.
No, it must be a hell of a journey for you. I've never been to anything as big as that. It's 5,000 delegates, I'm told. 5,000 plus, which is is absolutely huge, frighteningly huge, but interesting to see what it's like.
That's quite a the largest that I've been to is Ohio Linux Fest here in the United States, and that's generally 1,000 or 1,200, somewhere around there.
That's pretty big, but yeah, I have no idea how they organize a thing of 5,000 delegates. That's going to be quite impressive to see.
Yeah.
Anyway, pressing on. Episode 1372. This was Hacker Mike, James Michael DuPont, talking about rootstrikers.org and Federal Election Commission data processing. Now, this is a thing I didn't know anything at all about. Did you? Is this a subject you know about, Mahuka?
A little bit. The Federal Election Commission in the United States is in charge of regulating how elections are carried out, and there's certain data that has to be collected. So, for instance, if you donate money to a political campaign, they have to get your name and name of your employer. And what they're trying to do is make sure that companies are not making illegal campaign contributions.
Mm. Okay. So this is a sort of oversight process that's going on here by the community, presumably.
Yeah, a little known fact. I used to work in politics here in this country. And in fact, I'm working on a show right now where that comes into it a little bit.
That sounds interesting. Yeah. So the technical side of this impressed me from the size of the data manipulation exercise. It seems huge, just judging by what he was saying there. Impressive.
Indeed. There are those who say one of the big factors behind Barack Obama's two electoral victories was mastery of the technology. And Harper Reed was the fellow who was in charge of his IT operation and is gotten rather famous for how he handled all of that.
It was obvious to people, even in the UK, it was obvious that there was something special going on there. I don't think our politicians have got quite that far. I'm really apolitical, so I'm not really much of an authority on this. But I don't think we've quite reached that level of sophistication. But it won't be far off, I'm sure.
Oh, I do believe, from what I've seen, that the UK is picking up all of the stuff that the United States is doing.
Bound to be. Yeah. Okay. So next we had your good self starting the. Was this the first episode of the series on security?
Well, it's the first one that I did.
Yeah.
I decided that we should roll in something that Klaatu had done. And call that part of the series as well. And Ken may go back and find a few others in the archives that could now be packaged up as part of this. Mm-hmm. But what I was trying to do in this particular episode was just sort of lay some groundwork and say, this really is possible. GCHQ, or in our country, NSA, they can't walk on water. They can't do things that violate the laws of mathematics. So if you want to be protected, you really can.
Sure. It's a very relevant subject, obviously, and it does need this sort of introduction as well, I think, because I think people tend to be a little bit glib about it. How does it affect me? And, if I'm not doing anything wrong, why should I be worried type of attitude? So, These issues do need to be addressed. People need to be made aware.
Well, yeah, my favorite response to someone who says, I don't have anything to hide is, give me the URL of the webcam in your bathroom.
Yeah. That's a good answer. Very good. Okay. Well, it's good. I'm looking forward to hearing more. And there's more to come in the queue, I see. 1374 was Richard Hughes, who talked to us about building a, well, upgrading a Hackintosh, which is this something you have experience of?
No, I don't personally, but Richard is a friend of mine. He's one of the regulars on the Linux Tech Show.
I'm sure. Yes. Flying Rich, I recognize him.
Yeah, and he and I frequently interact on Google Plus. You know, we follow each other and that sort of thing.
Okay, I wasn't that interested as I listened to it, but I got you know, there's not really relevant to me. I'm not a Mac person. But as I listened, I became more interested. And my son is a Mac user and is just a surprise to me is building himself, or has been building himself, a new machine, which he's turning into a Hackintosh. So between Richard's episode and what my son's been doing, it's suddenly opened up big vistas for me. It's something. Sounds pretty good to do, actually. Now that Mavericks is free, isn't it? You can it there's no cost in getting a copy of it anymore.
There's no cost. I'm not sure what the license agreement involves. Apple has never officially allowed you to use their software on your own hardware.
No. They don't want you to be building Hackintoshes, but they're not really able to stop you, I guess. I don't know. But, oh, Ken just popped up in the chat.
Indeed. Hello, Ken.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Ken.
I'm only allowed to be here for 10 minutes. So.
All right, good.
Yeah, I was really interested in the Macintosh operating system at one time. And then I found Linux, and now Macintosh doesn't interest me at all. Linux is my home.
Yeah, I'm the same, really. I've not really used Macs to any great extent, apart from the ones that they had at work. Just dallied with them briefly. But my son's a musician, and he needs to run quite a lot of very demanding software on his Mac, and his MacBook Pro's been running out of steam, so building a nice new machine has meant that he can actually carry on with his studies as he needs to be doing, you know. So it's quite relevant in that respect.
Yeah, and I just see here our new host Kevin Wisher is in the chat room and just posted that Mavericks is dependent on your current model of Mac.
Okay. Presumably there's a power limitation or something of that sort. Obviously it has to be a modern Mac. It's not one of the old style. It doesn't run on the old style kit.
I would imagine you'd run into problems with device drivers and things like that. Mm.
Yeah. Okay. So next we have another episode from your good self, Ahuka. Another LibreOffice episode. These yep. nested lists, these list things are very useful to me, actually. I've been taking your hints on board, and I've got one or two templates which I've been building. I'm sure you're going to get to that some point soon. And I've been taking some of your advice and reworking them to build styles into them. So it's been really good. Thank you very much.
Well, you're quite welcome. But actually, templates is where I started the series.
You did mention templates. You're right. Yes, indeed.
And
yes.
The reason I had to do that is that styles have to be stored inside a template. So mm-hmm. I did templates mm-hmm. first, then moved into styles.
Yep. Will you be covering templates from the point of view of building one from scratch? I've got one that I use for recipes. I keep my own recipe log using LibreOffice. And, you know, I want to be able to, this is getting maybe getting a bit too technical, but things like the ability to easily move around the elements of it, you know, and fill them in appropriately. You can do some quite smart things with that, can't you, in templates? Yeah, am I making sense?
Yeah, I'm looking up what I did right now because I thought I had done that.
You're making sense to me, Dave.
Okay. That's a rare event.
Yeah, that's true, because you're usually operating too high for me, you know?
Yeah, I've got something in there about creating templates, and one of the first things I do is creating the default template, but then I talk about creating other templates.
Okay. Anyway, thanks for that, Sue. It is really good. I've been enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, it seems to be popular.
So, moving on then, and next we had Clatu talking on 1376, talking about teaching the art of computing, which was, I thought, a very interesting point of view. What I took away from it was the need to teach the skill rather than the product.
I had exactly the same takeaway from it.
Love this. This should be required listening for anyone who is going to teach computer science.
Yeah, it's certainly been the case in the UK that the move has been away from computing skills and towards, you know, Microsoft products, Excel or whatever it is, and that's been within the last, just I guess, 5 to 10 years that's happened. Because I've certainly met kids who were learning Pascal, for example, 10 years maybe or so ago, but my kids all went through just being told how to use Microsoft stuff, mostly, I think. So
I call that educational malpractice.
Absolutely.
Such a bad thing to do. But there is a great ray of sunshine in the UK, and it's called the Code Club.
Right, right. What's that exactly? I've not heard of that.
Oh, this was a couple of women started this thing called Code Clubs. And,
sounds like an episode to me, if you don't mind me saying so.
I've read interviews with them in magazines and things like that. And the way it works is that they go into a school, they get some mentors who are usually people who are in the industry, and set up these clubs. And the focus really is on learning the coding and the technology, rather than how to type in a word processor, which is a bunch of garbage.
Sure.
And in fairness, the Raspberry Pi is also doing a lot of that.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, I've got to go. I have a lot of my 10 minutes that I can be out of bed for this hour.
Back to bed, Ken.
The nurse is Bye. There. Okay. See you again. Dear. Anyway, it's definitely an area that needs a lot of debate, but hopefully the message is getting through. Are things changing significantly in the States?
Not nearly to the extent that I'm seeing in the UK.
Mm.
There are some people. In fact, I'm getting involved with a group here in Michigan called PenguinCon, which is a combination Linux and science fiction convention.
All right.
And I'm hoping we're going to get to address some of that. So I know a woman who is part of the GNOME project who is also very interested in it because she's got kids.
Good. Yes. Yeah. I guess that hopefully realization is dawning, and change will happen as time goes on. But it's sad that it's ever got into that state in the first place.
Oh, absolutely. I remember taking a computer science course in college, and for me, I'm talking like 1978, and I had to write some programs in BASIC. And, the old Dartmouth BASIC where, line 10, line 20, line 30.
Yes.
But I'll tell you, I think that was the best foundation I could have asked for to start thinking about how computers work.
Sure, absolutely. Oh, there's nothing like it. Years and years ago, in the place I used to work, the university I used to work, it was decided for some obscure reason that we were going to run some summer camp type courses. There's an organization in the UK that runs, you know, young people's summer adventure holiday type things, and there was a component which was a computing one. So we were teaching them how to write the 6502 assembler programs, you know, teenage kids, school kids, to drive little robots and that type of thing. And you know, they just lapped it up. They were racing ahead. They were well ahead of us. We were you know, running to keep up with them. So
yeah, robotics clubs are the great ray of sunlight here in the United States. There's a lot of those, and you know, kids are very excited by that.
Very good. Okay. So very good. Thank you, Klaatu, for that one. Next was Frank Bell doing a talk about the Zorizon Android tablet, and I must admit I thought he did a great summary of this particular device. It looked really nice, actually.
Yeah, and it's there's two things that come to my mind. The first is Zorizon as a company, you know, is one of those places that, you know, they build and support machines that use free software. And I think it's important to support people like that. So I'm really glad to see Frank do this. And, you know, I know the people there. I've met the CEO and that sort of thing. And okay. They're really good people.
Yeah. I've heard of them. I've heard that people like Dan on Tilts has bought several of their laptops and things, hasn't he? Has he bought any of those? Somebody has, anyway. Maybe it isn't him. But I've certainly heard people buying their kit and saying good things about them. I'm not sure we can get them in the UK, but sometimes
they're expanding internationally. In fact, they recently opened a New Zealand office.
Oh, right. Okay. So maybe they're moving in the UK direction. That would be good. So we don't have much here. That there were one or two companies that sold purpose-built machines with Linux on. I bought one myself using it now, but that was some number of years ago, and they've gone out of business since then. But
The other company that I can think of, now I don't know if they're outside the United States at all, is a company called System 76.
That's what I'm thinking of, actually. Yes. I think you can buy them in the UK, but they do cost a lot in shipping, as I guess you'd expect.
Oh, yeah. I guess if you have to get international shipping, that's going to add to the expense. But, you know, they do good stuff, too. I like Zorizon, but, you know, they're both good companies.
Yeah, that's good to see anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so next we had a whole raft of talks from OgCamp 13. And 1378 was a batch of talks from NY Bill, Theru, and Tim Timmy. I never know how to say his handle there, but that, I think that's how he likes to have it pronounced. Well, I was at OgCamp with the guys there, as you might have gathered, and it was really good. NY Bill was out there with the microphone, dashing about all over the place, getting as many interviews as he possibly could. Sometimes he remembered to switch it on. I hear as well. He did have a few problems, let's put it that way, but you know, it can happen to the best of us. But I thought there were some great interviews there, and OgCamp was the most interesting and exciting event.
Well, you know, I'm gonna say I am in no position to look down on people who forget to turn it on, because I did a I did a talk about Hacker Public Radio at my Linux users group, and I was going to record it. And I got all the way done with the talk and realized I'd never turned on the recording.
And it's an easy trap to fall into with some of these recorders, because you press the button once and you think it's recording. You have to press it a second time to record it.
That's exactly what happened.
It's the Zoom, the various Zoom recorders, and I've got one that I share with my son that suffers from the same thing. It's a Tascam that you know, it's setting it up, it's making sure all the levels are right, and then the next button press starts it recording. But unless you're really on the ball, and I'm not always when I'm doing these things, it's easy to fall into that problem. So
yeah, I've got a Sansa clip that I was.
Oh yeah, those are good too. Yeah. So yeah, there were 3 days, in fact, of interviews. The second one was further interviews. We managed to get Pete Cannon from the, was it Dick Turpin Roadshow? He was handed a microphone and asked to do an interview, which was very good. Then I did a brief one. Unfortunately, somebody started up a knitting machine right next to us, just as I switched the recorder on. So hopefully that didn't drown things out too much. There was some good stuff. NY Bill interviewed, speaking of youngsters who are getting into computing, Mini Geek Girl, I think she calls herself, who had done a talk at one of the Raspberry Pi things. I think she's about 13 or 14. Very impressive young girl. Amazing.
Yeah, I love hearing stuff like that.
Yeah, it was good. And the 1380, the episode on Friday, was the sound of four guys in a hotel room ironing T-shirts and making a reasonable job of it, but one or two mistakes coming across as well. I don't know if you picked up on those. It was quite funny because I knew the voices, having met them all, and I'd heard the story of the ironing disasters. So for me, it was quite amusing to listen to. I don't know how it came across for everybody else.
Yeah, I don't think that I listened to that one all the way through, to be very honest.
No, I can imagine. It's one of those sort of ambient recordings that you wouldn't give it a huge lot of attention, let's put it that way. I think the consensus was, well, just put it out there, because I'm sure somebody will find it amusing, even if it was only me.
I love the fact that Hacker Public Radio will, you know, is pretty much open to anyone who wants to do anything. But the other side of that is, every once in a while, I'm not saying frequently, but every once in a while, I get about 5 minutes into it, decide, yeah, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Hit the next button.
That's what it's all about. Yeah, absolutely. These things happen. So that's fair enough. So that was Odd Camp, and it was certainly interesting. Shame Ken couldn't make it, but there we go. So next, sorry, go ahead.
Just agreeing with you.
Okay, all right. So the next episode was 1381, which was Kevin Wisher, who's in the background here on this Mumble channel, but. He was talking about how he found Linux. He had a co-host whose name I missed. I don't have a record of it, and I don't see it on. Who was it again? Honky Magoo. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Honky Magoo. Okay.
Honky. Yes. I remember it now. Yeah. Okay. No, it was. I loved that episode. It was really good. I love all these reminiscences of the early days of computing. I don't think we have enough of those, to be honest with you. And the history of some of the experiences of Linux versions. I enjoyed that very much.
Well, I go back before Linux, so
yeah, me too.
Get me going. I can start talking about mainframes and punch cards.
Well, I've been holding back on that one, to be honest with you. I started computing in, I think, about 1970 as a student with punch cards, and I don't know whether I want to bore the world with my reminiscences of this, but I quite like listening to other people's. Maybe you and I should do one together at some point, comparing notes there, Ahuka.
It sounds like we're just about the same point. I think mine was 69 at Bank of Boston.
Oh, great. Great stuff. Oh, yeah. Oh, maybe we should compare notes sometime.
Yeah, you know, we could do that.
Yeah. That would be fun. I certainly, because there were some very, very bizarre things that people did in those days in terms of the way they prepared stuff and the equipment that they had. And you know, there were punch cards of different sorts. There was paper tape. There was all sorts of other weird technology, most of which people don't really have much knowledge of these days, unless they're of our age. So I just feel that it would be interesting to do a little bit more about that sort of stuff.
And then we can segue right into how we used to have to walk to school uphill both ways.
Oh, absolutely. That's the way it was. It was absolutely, no doubt about it. See,
these
youngsters,
have it too easy.
They just don't know they're born, these youngsters. They don't know. Oh, get off my lawn, by the way.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Let's not have too much of that. Anyway, thanks, Kevin. That was Kevin Wisher, that is. Thanks for that episode. That was most interesting.
And he says that they just recorded part two.
Oh, right. I'm looking forward to that. Excellent. So next was Dave Hingley being interviewed by his brother, Mike. I know both of these guys, having met them last year at Odd Camp and also this year. It's a little bit of a sad tale, actually. Dave's presentation at Odd Camp didn't go right because he couldn't get the projector to work with his laptop, his Linux laptop, and then had problems when he tried to set things up the next day, finding a room, and so he was just a little bit unhappy about the way things had panned out, and really quite sorry to hear that.
Well, I know exactly how he feels, because that's what happened to me at Ohio Linux Fest a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really nice presentation that just fell apart completely because I couldn't get the projector and my laptop to talk to each other properly.
Yeah. And why? It seems bizarre that should be a problem these days, doesn't it?
Well, I think it was an older projector, and you know, it's. I don't usually have that problem, but I certainly did this time.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was older kit at Liverpool. In fact, I think he said something like it was a VGA device, and
exactly. And you know, very often. Because I was one of the organizers at Ohio Linux Fest this last time around, and you know, you're scrambling around, you'd have no budget, you're trying to find, you know, does anyone have a projector we can borrow?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you get what you get.
Yeah, sad. I hope it hasn't put the two brothers off anyway, because it's good to have them around at Odd Camp. So anyway. So next was the last community news, which we never comment on for fear of infinite recursion. If we keep it going.
Okay, yeah, let that one go.
Then we had Keith Murray giving us his first show, How I Got Into Linux and OSS. He had an interesting journey along the way. I thought he'd made various moves towards Linux and hadn't quite got there.
Indeed.
Over the years, it's quite an unusual journey. It was interesting to see that sort of point of view, I thought.
Yeah, I always like those.
No, it's I think the sort of personal history episodes are always fascinating. Sometimes I prefer them to the technical ones. I don't know what that says about me, but that's...
Well, I think for me, part of it is that Hacker Public Radio is a community. And, you know, I like getting to know the people.
Exactly, and, yes,
you know,
yes.
Find out a little bit about their background and, you know, how did you get here? And, you know, that just it adds a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's definitely it. It's good. So, anyway, 1385 was another LibreOffice. Is that the end of the nested list? Is that the end of that particular subject now, then?
I think that's the end of the nested lists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the next area is getting into the page layout stuff. And
right.
I've already uploaded, I think, 3 more shows in that. And mm-hmm. I'm going to try and write 1 or 2 more this weekend.
Oh, great. Yes.
So I've already done the stuff on page styles and a general overview of page layout. I've got to get to frame styles. And then I think, when I finish that, I sort of promised a thing on outlining, and then I'm going to get into Calc.
Right. Yes. Yes. You said that. I think, yeah, I think people are champing at the bit a little bit there because they want to know how to drive their spreadsheets, don't they?
Well, actually, at this point, so am I. I'm sort of feeling like, you know, I just have to slog through, you know, the last little bit of this writer stuff.
Yes.
You know, my mind is already on Calc.
Fair enough. So,
Kevin Wisher just asked a question in the chat room, any plans for Graw? So let me say that, you know, God willing, if my voice lasts and Hacker Public Radio stays up, I'm going to go through all of the aspects of LibreOffice.
Great stuff. Great stuff.
But I...
Yes. Kevin's...
Yeah, and then Kevin just said it's a good replacement for Microsoft Publisher. I'm going to say LibreOffice Writer is not a bad... It's actually as much a page layout or, you know, desktop publishing program as anything.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's impressive stuff.
It is indeed.
I've been using it since Star Office times, so seen it develop, and it's been growing and improving all of that time. It's been really good.
Yeah, I actually started with Star Office, and in fact, I haven't actually recorded it yet, but I've written an episode that Ken asked me to do, in which I'm going to get into sort of the meta background of all of this stuff. You know, how did I get into this, and how do I put my shows together, and things like that. And Ken asked for it, so I thought, what the heck, let's do it.
Oh, very good. That'll be interesting. Yeah, good. More history. I always like that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, next we had Bob Tregulus. Tregulus, how does he pronounce that, do you think? Tregulus?
I would think, yeah, Tregulus. Or something like that.
Yeah.
However you pronounce it, it looks like this is going to be a series, and I love it. This particular one took me back to the days of my youth, because you know they're talking about what's called the underground or alternative press here in the United States.
Yes.
You know, that's what I grew up with. I was this anti-war hippie back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. Well, I think. I'm not sure I was that much exposed to obviously I knew about those sort of movements in the States, being of a similar age and stuff, but I don't know that much of it came my way anyway. Maybe I just never looked.
You weren't subject to being drafted, I'm guessing.
No, of course not. No. But I mean, it was well known that nasty things were happening over the pond there, and you know, there's a lot of sympathy towards the problems, but yeah, I don't think we had an in-depth understanding of it. At least I didn't. So
yeah,
yeah, No, it's interesting.
It is, as your own Dr. Samuel Johnson once said, knowing that you're to be hanged in a fortnight focuses the mind wonderfully.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Being subject to the draft and the possibility of being sent over to Vietnam does really focus your mind on the issue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, yeah, I can sympathize with that to a certain degree. As a kid, there was still conscription to the army, you know, after the Second World War in the UK, which was, I don't know, not quite clear why, but it continued on for some number of years after the end of World War II. So it was a subject that, as a child, you knew that there was a possibility that that would continue when you grew up, and you might find yourself dragged off to the army. So, you know, so it's always a bit of a fear of mine as a young boy. So I have sympathy. Yeah. Anyway, that's we look forward to hearing more about that. Next, we had Underrunner giving us his first show on his Christmas light synchronization setup. And wow, is this an impressive project? The notes are really good. I did find that I was reading through them as I listened. This project seems to have grown and grown. Could have done with a picture. That was the only thing. Just a picture of maybe of the finished product would have been nice, but still, no complaints. Very good.
Or a video on YouTube.
Oh, absolutely. Even better. Yes. Yes. But it certainly sounded quite a project. So next we had Sigflop phoning in an episode, which she did just off the top of her head, on the JavaScript language, which I found really, really quite fascinating. I've looked at it, looked at JavaScript just briefly and thought, oh, yeah, there's JavaScript. I don't want to have anything to do with that particularly, but I'm going to maybe start rethinking that point of view. What did you think?
Well, I think almost any time Sigflop does a show, the first thing that comes to mind is, I wish I was smart enough to follow every single thing that she
yes,
says.
Yes, yes.
And I'm not, and that's, you know, that's simply life. But, you know, I often listen to it and think, boy, if I could just do half of that stuff.
Absolutely, yes. Plus also, I think her view of what's good in the world of programming language is certainly to be considered. She seems to have a very deep insight into these things that I certainly don't have. So I did leave, after listening to her program and hearing about the ins and outs of JavaScript and Node.js, which is the server-side aspect of it, I did go off and install it just to have a look at it. You know, the Node.js thing, which is a way of writing. You can, it's got a web server capability built into it, so you can build your whole application from scratch pretty much with it, I think. So it's a fascinating thing, but boy, does it blow your mind.
It is powerful, no doubt about that.
Yeah. And it's really complicated because of its asynchronous capabilities, which is the point that she was making in her second show, where she just came back with some corrections to what she'd said previously. I think to help clarify the synchronous asynchronous elements of the language, which I personally found quite helpful because I wasn't quite getting what she was saying in the first show, so I was glad of that.
Yeah, I know a little bit of JavaScript. I was back when I was on the faculty of a local university, I ended up in charge of the website. So, you know, I did a certain amount. I was nowhere near being an expert in it. It was more like, find something that does kind of what I need to do and get in and understand the code enough to adapt it.
Yeah. I've done similar sort of stuff, but it's been largely, in my experience, the business of taking the HTML structure and doing things with it or bending it in some way with JavaScript. You know, if you want some sort of something dynamic to happen on the page or something, JavaScript's the way to do it. But the way that people are using it now is to be a primary language for developing whole applications, which is a very different take on the subject, I think. So definitely need some investigation, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So in a good couple of shows from SigFlop.
Yeah, thanks for that. Very good. So finally, for the month, we had your good self again telling us about the basics of encryption, which I listened to that a couple of times because it's pretty densely packed with info there. It's very good. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, and yeah. I think it helps to get some of the background stuff so that when you get into technically how to do it, you understand what the issues are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I liked your point about the difference between codes and ciphers, which I'd noted down here, that it's easy to misuse these terms, which I think I've been guilty of in the past. So that's good. That was good. I was glad for that heads up.
Yeah, I mean, it's even people who are professionals, you know, get sloppy about that. So you refer to NSA as code breakers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And really what they are is ciphers. You know, it's maybe a small thing, but I like to just be clear on what the distinction is.
Yeah. I think it can be quite an important point if you're digging deeply into this stuff.
Yeah, it's you're either trying to hide something or you're not.
So. Absolutely, yeah. Very good. Okay, so that's all of the past month's shows. And normally Ken likes to do a review of what's been going on in the mailing list. So I've tried to put together my summary of things there. So feel free to correct me and redirect me, Ahuka, as I go through this. But the first item that came to mind to mention was Hacker Mike. That's Mike DuPont's work that he's doing in developing a publisher tool in Python, which is not so much a tool, but a library and a set of capabilities to allow you to do everything from the show notes to the publishing of your HBR show. I've looked at this briefly, so I'm not sure I've fully grasp all that it's capable of doing, but it looks like a great idea.
I'm really glad there are people working on stuff like this. I would have to admit I don't understand it at all.
It's because I'm a bit of an idiot when it comes to doing stuff like this. I found that because I couldn't always remember what I was supposed to be doing to prepare a show if I was doing one. I made myself a sort of checklist of, you know, have you remembered to do this, have you remembered to do that? And I was thinking of coding it into something just for my own use, potentially for others' use, but, you know, you start with yourself and then maybe expand it. I was thinking of doing something along these lines, but mine was going to go right from the beginning of, what's the name of your show, you know, and then it would make us a directory to store all the show details in, named with that name, and it would use that, store that information to, so it would then know how to construct the name of the file that you're going to send to the FTP server and that sort of stuff. But it looks like Mike is already way, way ahead with that stuff. So I think I'll just sit back and watch.
Well, anything that makes it easier. But
yeah,
I'm
absolutely.
In favor of.
Absolutely.
I'm finding right now that it takes me almost as long to do the show notes as it does to record the show.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mind you, I think that's a good thing. Personally, I'm a great believer in good show notes because you know sometimes you don't always absorb the information completely through your ears, you know, through listening to it. So something to read as well and something to come back to and refer to is quite important.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm. So there's also been discussion of the infrastructure for the New Year's show, yeah. And I know that Kevin Wisher is hoping that he's going to get some of the people who are going to be involved in the background elements of this to discuss this soon. He was hoping, I think, to get them together this evening after this recording, but I don't know whether he's going to get anybody tonight. But there's things seem to be coming along, coming together, or certainly work's being done to get stuff in a better state than it was last year.
And for anyone who is listening to this program and does not normally follow the mailing list, and I suspect there are a few, what we're talking about here is we do this, it's actually more than 24 hours, I think, mm-hmm. It's a continuous New Year's show that takes the beginning of the new year from one part of the world all the way around again. And these people dial in for a while and then, go off to do other things. And it's all done on Mumble. So what Kevin is doing is trying to put together a kind of a federated group of Mumble servers that can connect everyone in. Mm-hmm. And if you are up, oh, Kevin sorry, wants to talk.
Sorry to interrupt, but actually we're going to be using the same Mumble server we used last year, the one from OpenSpeak, John Neustetter. It started out being the Linux Basics Mumble server, but it's kind of expanded to be just an open server for anybody now. Last year we had some issues with the two bot machines that kept dropping out of the room. I've personally spoken with John Neustetter, and he found the problem on that hosted VPS to get that fixed, so we won't have that issue this year. But what I'm trying to get coordinated is our group of Icecast streaming servers so that we can produce, provide the live stream for everybody to listen to. We just need the one Mumble server, and we just need about four Icecast servers to mirror each other, and so that we have plenty of we're actually going to have an MP3 feed and an OGG feed just like we did last year. So it's basically the same setup. We just need to get everybody that's providing those four Icecast servers. Ken gave me access to the HPR VPS, which is going to be the main feed that the two bots will be pumping audio to. And then off that main HPR VPS, the four mirrors that we need to provide the live stream. So I'm providing the MP3 bot that will be pumping out the MP3 feed, and then I'm also providing the first mirroring server off the main HPR VPS. Cobra 2, I believe.
Okay, so Kevin, you were trying to get some Icecast servers. Is there anything else you need from the community that we should mention here?
No, we just need the four. Well, actually, I'm pretty sure we've got two already in line for the MP3 side, and then I just need to get in contact with Crayon. He did the OGG bot, and I can't remember who provided the two mirrors for the AUG stream. So that's what I'm missing right now, is to get that all figured out.
All right, good. Okay. Thanks for the report.
And, good, thank you.
Also, while we're talking about the New Year's show, while the technical stuff is going on now to prepare for all of it, this is open to anyone in the Hacker Public Radio community. If you can connect to Mumble, then, you know, please feel free to jump in and spend some time with us New Year's. It's a lot of fun. Everyone involved loves it.
I agree. The first year, which was the 2011, 2012 New Year's, they just did a 12-hour, and that turned into the following year, which was last year, to be the 24-hour show. And the first year, I wasn't involved with all. I don't think we even did a stream. I can't remember, but I helped in that 12-hour period to, you know, get people in a separate room to test their audio before they went into the main room. We need people to volunteer to do that, you know, to help people with audio issues who are new to Mumble. Like Klaatu and I, that first year, kind of hung out in the sound booth or whatever, just another spare room that where the main show wasn't being broadcast from, and just help people with their Mumble issues, got them set up before they moved in there to do any speaking.
And I think Pokey helps with that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, I haven't heard from Pokey lately.
Okay. But regardless, it's a 24-hour show, so everybody needs to, we need people to volunteer at particular various different times. Sorry, I'm back. Another 10-minute session.
Ken, when is the actual official start time? Is it going to be the same as last year?
Whenever the first time zone goes into the new year, then we do it and we stop after the last time zone goes in. So that's, for some strange reason, is something like 28, 29 hours instead of 24. So.
We're such a hit and popular that Leo Laporte is copying us this year. He's having a 24-hour podcast this year.
Yeah.
I heard about that. He's staying up, though. I think there was only one or two who stayed up last year. Also, this topic of food is completely banned this year.
Yeah.
How about file managers that only give you one window?
That is also high on the list of stuff that's banned.
We need to designate an official person that can kick anybody off when they start talking about dual pane file managers.
Absolutely not. No, it's an open forum, and you can argue with them all you want. I would ask people. There's no reason why. What really worked quite well was if people could bring something to the table, like a short technical segment, a 15-minute technical segment, as well. Think of topics like, what was the best hack that you did all year? What was the best podcast you did all year? What are you thankful for the last year in the field of tech? That sort of stuff, so that we can keep the conversation going and have those regularly throughout the year. And what was also pretty cool and I really liked was, I think Becky Newcomb started it, was welcoming the various different time zones as they crossed, which was kind of nice because it broke up the conversations that were going over over and over the same topic again.
Yeah, now the way the time zones work, that means the day starts in middle of the Pacific, where the international dateline is?
No, it starts way the other side. It starts even before that. It starts just left of the US, because what happened was all those islands were on the other side of the international dateline, and their vacation days were being messed up with people, and they were on their invoices and everything. They were invoicing 2 days later and all that. So a whole go of those islands
moved to the other side of the international deadline. So even though, so they maintain a 2-hour difference the other side of the international deadline because they're that far away, but they're still considered to be part of that same day. Weird or what? And this, and vice versa works the other side.
You learn something new every day at Hacker Public Radio.
Yeah, it was a big shock to everybody because I looked up when it was the first time, and then doop-doop-doop. Oh, it's already New Year's Day somewhere, so there you go.
So I think it in any case, it probably means we have to start like 12 or 14 hours before you get to midnight at Greenwich.
Yeah, I think it starts around 10 o'clock in the morning, 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, UTC time. Well, CET time. So for me, 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And then, but I'll put the actual times worldwide onto the website. I'm sure Dave Morris has a script for that sort of thing.
I'm sure I have one in the locker somewhere out there. I'll go and look. Okay, so the next thing I have on my list was to mention Danny Meeks, who was the person who kindly offered to print a replacement banner, as was mentioned earlier on. So thank you very much for that. There was a mumble discussion about the design scheduled. I'm not sure whether that actually came to pass or not, but there'd certainly been some movement to finalize a design, I believe.
Yeah, I remember there was discussion about doing that.
Mm-hmm. Don't know anything more about it at the moment, I'm afraid, though.
Yeah, me either.
I think the meeting was planned. I don't know if it's gone ahead yet.
No. Okay. Then Ken pointed out that there was an Indiegogo campaign for a new magazine called Linux Voice, which was the people from the people who had previously been working for another magazine whose name is just escaped me. I've got a copy
Linux
here.
Format.
Linux Format. I have a copy here on the desk beside me, so I should know. Yes, so you very kindly flagged that up, and I think a number of HPR people went over and threw some money in their direction, and it looks as if that campaign is doing very well as far as last thing I saw.
I hope they do. I signed up for a print subscription, which is like £90 for me because I'm in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
90 euros or 90 something. The thing that I think is the two things that come to mind. Number one is that these guys were all at Linux Format. I don't know what this means for Linux Format, but up until now, I've always thought it was the best Linux magazine that I was aware of, and they're the ones who made it that good.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the other thing is that these guys are, as I put it, walking the walk on this. They're talking about all of their content is going to be freely available through Creative Commons like 9 months after they publish it. And they're also saying that 50% of their profits are going to go to support free and open source software, and they've already gone to their community to say, give us some ideas about what we might want to do. Now, the first year, those profits may not be enormous. Getting a magazine off the ground is not for the faint of heart, but it really tells me that they're going about this in a way that I want to support.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite interesting to see a publishing movement of this sort coming into being, don't you think? That it's because in other parts of the publishing world, things are dying, and or they're putting up paywalls or that type of thing, keep everybody out. Whereas these guys are trying to walk a line between, you know, making money on it and having an element of availability through the mechanism you're just describing.
Sorry, yeah, guys, I need to go again. Yeah. And I probably won't be back.
Go to bed.
Thanks. Yes, I'm getting dirty looks from my wife, and not in a good way. I just wanted to say, coming up here is a discussion about we need shows. Obviously, we continue to need shows. We use 260 shows every year. We storm through lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of shows, and people have been very good about getting them in. What I'd like people to think about is how can we get a more guaranteed stream of shows coming in. What is it that we can do, or is there any other ways that we can motivate new people to come in, or ways that we can get people to stop procrastinating and sending shows? For example, I know of three or four different people who have shows recorded and they're not edited and they're not uploaded. So we need those shows coming in, guys, and we need to continue feeding the queue. So how do we feed the beast is a topic that I don't expect to be answered here, but it would also be one that we should discuss at length during the New Year's show. And with that, I'll leave you and thank you guys for taking the time to do this recording tonight.
Okay, thanks, Ken.
Take care, Ken.
Take care of yourself.
Okay, so I think Ken's probably said all that needs to be said on the more shows issue. Obviously, things are getting a little bit difficult at the moment. Got a week's worth ahead of us, and then very little for the next month or more. So, obviously, things are getting a little bit strained, but.
And the thing that I want to emphasize, anyone who's listening to this, you know, you don't need to have a fancy studio to do this. You know, Mr. Gadgets, for instance, I think just has a portable recorder in his car and just talks into it while he's driving around Kansas City. And, you know, that seems to work fine. So, you know, just, it can be pretty simple. You know, we were talking earlier about how I'm so dumb, I can't even figure out how to turn on the recorder, but, you know, something like a Sansa clip, you know, you can just record something into that, just talk into it. And, you know, you get a show in 10, 15, 20 minutes. You know, you got something. So the main thing is, you know, get in, get going. And I think once you get your feet wet, you discover it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of people I've spoken to about this have really enjoyed that process of breaking through the first show barrier. And then, you know, moving forward from that, because, you know, it gives you a boost, an ego boost to have actually achieved that, and gives you the incentive to come up with some other ideas, you know, and get on and do more. Everybody has something, I'm sure, that they could tell the world about through the HPR route.
Yeah, and I remember when I got started, it was because of that New Year's show, the first one. And I just, you know, listening to that, I just thought, well, heck, that it can't be that hard. Like, you know, I should give it a try. And, you know, my first one was how I got into Linux, like so many people. But, you know, by the way, even if you don't use Linux, you know, how about a show about how awesome Windows is? I mean, there's someone out there who thinks that.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, we're open to all of that stuff. You know, just the only thing that, you know, we say is that just, you know, put something into it that, you know, that you're interested in. You know, what is your passion? I think that's the best way to come up with stuff.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Has anyone done an HPR show describing how many different ways there are to do a HPR, show?
I've written one that I may even try and record this weekend that talks about how I'm doing the LibreOffice series. That's just one way. I don't know that I've heard anyone go through all the different ways.
No, there haven't been. There have been one or two that I've heard, but nothing has really given a broad overview of the sort you're implying there, Kevin. Good idea.
I mean, Honky Magoo and I did ours off a Mumble server. We just both, decided on a time to meet. We discussed, kind of went over some show notes we had put together, and then we just both hit the record button at the same time. So he's recording on his local machine, I'm recording on mine, and that's pretty much it. And then you throw the file into Audacity, edit out any stuff you don't want in there. I think probably the biggest drawback for people is maybe using Audacity. I don't know. It is quite daunting if you haven't used it before.
Yeah, it's true. It does have lots and lots of controls, and it's not entirely clear what they all do. That was my impression of it anyway. It's taken me quite a while to find out when I need to use what and how to do it and so forth. So yeah, there have been one or two shows that have looked at Audacity. I think Nido did something a few months back on the subject, but there's room for more, I'm sure.
There's actually a podcast series called The Audacity to Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Your point, Kevin, about doing a Mumble show across Mumble, that's an interesting point, because if there's two of you and you can get a conversation going, it's often a lot easier to come up with something than it is to sit there on your own with a subject. I've certainly found that the odd occasion where I've done a joint show with Ken in particular, it's been pretty straightforward to make a show that way. In fact, we've done one show that I didn't even know it was going to be a show. It was just a way of communicating, and then we recorded it, and it was a show. So it's a good.
I agree, because if, like me, I'm not a very boisterous person, but when Honky and I did it, he kind of prodded me along, and I kind of prodded him along, and we kind of had some moments of silence, and it works out real well if you're not, real outgoing, and it's just like talking to someone on the phone, a long lost friend.
Yeah.
And Honky and I have never met in person. We just were met on IRC. We started, I think, the Linux Basics used to have a open lug Mumble meeting on Friday evenings. That's when I very first talked with him. So, it's just been an online acquaintance that I've met through IRC and such. And we just got together and made a show. It's really nothing to it.
Yep. So, yeah. Have a get Mumble installed and have a go, I think, is the message.
This server here can be used to record your shows. So,
yes.
I mean, it's open to the public. So.
Indeed. Yeah, and the Hacker Public Radio room is not often in use. So get there and use it. So, good. Okay, so shall we just go to the last item then from the mailing list, which was the torrent that's being set up for distributing shows. The origins of this go way back, I think, It was a suggestion, I think, that was made some time ago and was discussed briefly on one of these shows, which was why can't HBR shows be made available through BitTorrent? I think that's evolved. I'm not really completely up to speed with this, I have to say, but I think this has evolved a bit into a way of distributing the archived shows, because the shows obviously go back in time, right back to the original show, and they're on the HBR server and also on archive.org, or at least are in the process of being put up onto archive.org. Should anybody wish to go back in time and listen to earlier shows, then getting them through a torrent would be a great idea. And I think some of the discussion was talking about how you would split them up into batches so you could go back to get to reasonable sized chunks. So
yeah, that does seem to make sense to do it that way, because we've got 1,400 shows, roughly, on Hacker Public Radio. There was 300 preceding it today with a techie, and then, you know, depending on how far back you want to go, people will talk about predecessors to that. You know, it's a lot. And the other problem that that people have looked at is, do you need to come up with a new torrent every time a new show is released? Because that would mean you have to update the torrent every day.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of discussion about this, and I think DeepGeek is in the process of setting up a demo torrent for Speaks, some shows in Speaks format.
So, yeah, it sounded something like that.
Yeah. As I say, I've not really dug deeply into this, it looks like there's quite a number of people in getting involved with this, so I think it's got its own momentum. So that's good to see.
Indeed.
Okay. So I think that's the end of our agenda there. Have you got anything else that you wanted to raise there, Ahuka?
No, I think, we're almost at an hour and 20 minutes at this point, so it's probably a good time to wrap it up.
I think you're right, yeah. Kevin, have you got anything you wanted to add before we sign off?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay then, thanks everybody for joining us, and I forget how Ken ends these things, but I'll leave him to do that next time.
Right.
Thanks everybody.
We'll see you all next month.
See you all next month.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HBR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.